I come to the railroad in 1916. I was 19 years old. Of course, I had to tell them I was 21 in order to get a job. But it took me about a year or two to make up my mind that I was going to stay on the railroad because it's so hard. That work was hard. If I hadn't been a strong man, I couldn't have made it.
Why did you want to work for the railroad in the first place?
I don't know. There's two things that I wanted to be when I was growing up. First, I wanted to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. And then, if I couldn't make that, I wanted to be an engineer. So I made the engineer. I didn't have willpower to fight my way for a doctor because my father had 14 kids, you know, and it took a lot of money.
And for sure.
He didn't have no surplus, and he didn't have anything to put me through college. So I got through high school, that's as far as I went.
Anyway, getting back to the railroad.
Well,
what was your first job?
Fired. Mm-hmm. Back in that day and time, you had to go to fire an engine and work seniority. And you worked your way up. As the older men passed on, died, got killed, or what have you, well, you worked your way up. Mm-hmm. I fired a locomotive for about 25 years.
Really?
before I ran one.
Did you always have your eye on being an engineer?
Oh, yeah, sure. That's what you're working for, is mm-hmm. an engineer.
How did you get your job? What did you have to do to get that first job?
I just came down here one morning, and you don't remember, but old Villa of Mexico came over into Texas and killed 17 people back in 1916. Well, Jack Pershing was the first lieutenant. Jack Pershing took 5,000 troops and went into Mexico chasing Villa. Mm-hmm. Well, me and a couple of my buddies came down here to join the militia. We were going to Mexico. In the meantime, we met a friend of ours. He said, "Look here, boys, I've got a job firing an engine." Well, I always did want a railroad. And so we got on a streetcar. At that time, there wasn't a hard surface piece of street in this town at that time, except from the square up yonder. It had one block each way, brick. Mm-hmm. All the rest of it was dirt. Streetcar track ran right along. This is all woods in here. Ran right along out here where you turned off to Spencer. We got on the streetcar, went out to Spencer. So went over, and at that time, the general roundhouse foreman was named Bob Judian. He was a little cockeyed man. You couldn't tell when he was looking at you. Hmm. But he was a big stick out there then. Somebody said, he's the man to give you a job. So I went in the roundhouse. I did all the talking, of course, for the two other boys. And I saw him coming. He walked with his head like this. Mm-hmm. So I walked up in front of him and I said, "Mr. Julian, we want a job firing an engine on the Asheville Division. We want to go on the Asheville Division." I'm glad we didn't. And he said, "We don't need anybody." Mm-hmm. I said, "Why do you tell me that every time I come down here?" I said, "I just talked to a man you hired." I said, "Now, here's three of us, and we mean to stick if you'll give us a job railroading." "Well," he said, "if that's the way you feel, go see the road form of engines." He was the man who could sign us up. So we went to see the road foreman, and he signed us up. Hmm. And we all three stuck. The other two boys are dead. One of them died.
What were their names?
Vance Davis was one of them. Cancer got him. He died 3 or 4 years ago. And the other one was Bob Davis, who lived right at the head of the street here. And it's been about 1 or 2 years, I don't know which.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Now, when you first started, you were shoveling coal. Is that?
Yeah.
What was that job like?
Huh?
What was that job like? Just give me kind of a rundown for...
Well, you're shoveling the coal, you know. You ever been up on a steam engine?
Well, only one of these in the shop here.
Well, you got your tank. Hook your engine, you know. you got the shovel, the coal. You had to lean back here against the cab, and you had a shovel. Of course, we had air doors. Reach back, get a shovel of coal, step on the pedal, put it in, like, just like that. Mm-hmm. And we had those tanks, those big tanks that hold 12, 13 tons of coal. Well, we had coal chutes all along the railroad, one at Greensboro, one at Danville. And it would drive in, fill up the tank every time it'd go by with coal. And with good coal, it wasn't so hard to find any. I enjoyed finding it with a shovel, I really did then. But I could really burn coal. You had to know how to burn coal to fire an engine. Now, we had men here that never did learn to fire, never did learn to burn coal.
What did you have to do it right?
Well, you can't overdo it, and you can't underdo it, just like firing your furnace in the basement. You go down there and load that furnace up, cover all the fire up, you don't have any steam, but just put in enough so it'll catch the fire and keep going all the time. Mm-hmm. Well, those engines had a strong exhaust through that firebox, you know, and you put that coal in there, you put a shovel here, shovel here, shovel there, and one in the corner, crawl up on the seat box, ride a little bit, drop down there and do the same thing over and over. Then...
How did you learn how to do it right? Did somebody teach you, show you?
Back in that day and time, you had to learn to road at your own expense. Learn how to come down and go out with other firemen. They'd teach you how to do it. Then the stokers came along. That was the finest thing in the world. The stokers would fire those in your mechanical, you know.
You have to load the stoker, is that the coal?
You load the tank, and the auger ran back through the middle of the tank, and that drew the coal right up to the firebox, and that put it in the fire.
Did it all automatically?
Yeah. That was very good. Then come the diesel. The diesel, just like, is much different than riding a diesel and a steam engine than riding your automobile and a horse and buggy. Mm-hmm. Now these diesels, have you ever been up on one of them?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you go up on your diesels. When they first came here, of course, these older diesels that got down, they're not built right. When they first came here, we had cabs, and all the fag trains had cabs on them. Well, you come up out of the powerhouse, two or three steps out of the powerhouse, and close off that door. You can carry on a conversation, ordinary conversation, 190 miles an hour. Everything was quiet. Up in front, everything was behind you, just like riding an airplane. Everything was behind you. But these are the ones they got now. It's all in front of you. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not covered up. It's uncovered.
Does that make it noisier, having it in?
Yeah, it makes it noisy the way they got it now. It doesn't make the engine any noisier, but it's all right there uncovered and in front of you. I used to go to Washington about two or three times a year, and the president meet with the officials, and one of the vice presidents told me that whenever the diesels came on the scene, every railroad in this country was in the red, and the only thing that saved them was the diesel locomotive. Southern Railway put in operation the first diesel engine in the world, out of Cincinnati. Put it in freight service. Cincinnati.
What year would that have been?
I can't recall what year it was. Do you remember the original way of the diesel? Who made the diesel? Dr. Diesel was a German. He built that diesel engine. And he tried to sell it to the German government, and the German government wouldn't pay him what he wanted. So he got on the plane, was going across, started to England, and he disappeared over the English Channel. Because it's known that the German government threw him overboard, keeping him selling that diesel. That's what happened.
Really?
The diesel engine doesn't have a spark plug. It has a pump that fuel comes out of there with a 5,000 pound pressure on top of that cylinder. And the pressure is so great that when it hits air, it exhausts, it lights.
Uh-huh.
They're a great engine, there's no doubt about it.
Did you like running those more than the steam engines?
Huh?
You like running those more than the steam engines?
Oh, yeah. Well, the steam engine was... You got a kick out of running the old steam engine, but when it comes to the diesel, that's more business. You can't stall a diesel engine. You can overload him and make him stand still, but those wheels will keep turning all the time. You don't stall the engine. We had, when they first brought those diesels here, they hooked six of them together. Mm-hmm. You can hook a hundred of them together, as far as that's concerned, and one throttle handles the whole business.
Really?
Every time you hook in another diesel, you got a cord, jump cable there with all the hundreds and hundreds of little electric protruding things here. When you couple that in, that couples up to everything to that other diesel all the way through. Mm. It all works simultaneously.
So you got a pretty powerful engine working there then.
Oh yeah, man.
All those hooked together.
You, six of them. I left here one day with 250 cars, freight cars. They called me up, yard master, and said, "Fred, you got 250 cars." I said, "I don't give a dad limb if we got 500. I told my fireman, I said, "Now when I get the slack all out of this train, it had eight notches. You notch out one notch at a time. I said, I'm going to put her in eight notches. I'm going to leave her there, uphill and downhill." I did, and an hour and 15 minutes, I was in Greensboro, 250 cars. But now you take 250 cars, you got about 100 feet or more slack in that train. And if you don't know how to control that slack, you won't go nowhere. Mm. You got to watch that slack coming in and out and starting a train like that. You got to be very careful, start one car at a time, you know. You reach and get that throttle, bam, get back there about 50, 75 cars, you pull a draw in.
How did you learn how to control those things properly?
Oh, it just takes time to do it. Yes,
learn by trial and error, is that it?
Or? Yeah, well, that's got a lot to do with it, yeah. Every time you make an error, you knew what you'd done wrong, so
yeah.
You wouldn't have to tell the superintendent that, but...
And there wasn't another engineer that would teach you how to do things or tell you his old tricks?
What?
Wasn't another engineer that would teach a person
No, we didn't, a new know, engineer? No, we didn't have anybody out there. Whenever you got to be an engineer, you'd work your way up, work mm-hmm. your way... You had ridden that left side for years, and whenever you stand for the engineer, of course you switched over to the right side.
Mm-hmm.
But of course you've been on that engine long enough to know all the ins and outs, you know.
What would you have to be doing? Well, let's see. Is it called a fireman? Would that have been your first job?
Yeah.
What did you do after that?
Engineer.
Have you spent 25 years, he said, as a fireman first?
Well, back in that day and time, yeah, but now, you know, these people are all retired now, 60 years old. People didn't retire back in that time, they just worked till they died.
Mm-hmm.
Or get fired or something, but they got men out there now running engines that haven't been out there in 4 or 5 years. I didn't stand a fire engine. I tell these fellas uptown, I didn't stand a firing engine, and they're running the engine or running the train as conductor, because that's the seniority is moving a whole lot faster. Every time an older man moves on, another man, that the man under him moves up, you know.
Mm-hmm. So back when you were starting, people were just, you know, the old engineer would stay there.
Say
that
they died.
Time.
Yeah. Say that they died. I could be running that train right now. I'm running that streamliner when I quit.
Mm-hmm.
I could be running that train right now as well as I ever run it. But after you stay that long enough to be an engineer on one of these diesels that run a passenger train, you know all the ins and outs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no trouble to you at all.
Now, you mentioned sitting on the left side, you know, yeah, for a couple of years before being an engineer.
That's the fireman's side. Fireman rides the left side, engineer the right.
Well, how often exactly would you have to go and, if you were sitting on the left side, and actually get up and do something?
Well, you know, the fireman has to get up pretty often. He stayed up 99% of the time when he fired with the shovel. Of course, mm-hmm. now, sometimes...
What was his job later when they changed to...
What?
No, when he changed to diesel engines, was there still a fireman?
Well, yeah. Well, now they don't have firemen. Since I quit, they took the firemen off freight trains, but the government makes them carry firemen on a passenger train. Don't have one passenger train through here. We had about 8 passenger trains each way a day when I came in. Now we got one.
Mm-hmm.
An Amtrak, we call it. They really had passenger trains. That was back out before they had hard surface roads, before the airplane came around.
Yeah.
Those hard surface roads, you know, everybody got automobiles. Well, now, I can ride a pass anywhere I want to, but if I go to Charlotte to Greensboro, I don't fool with no train. I get my automobile. Well, you know the man's got to buy a ticket. He can drive his car instead of buying a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
But now I understand that they're talking about putting on another passenger train through here now on this gas situation.
Yeah, that'll make a big difference, I think.
Yeah.
Well, what was it like working for the railroad those 25 years that you were a fireman?
Well,
what sort of changes did you see?
It all depends. You can make it hard for yourself. I liked it. I always did like railroad. I liked every day
mm-hmm.
that I worked. I enjoyed it. But if you got a job and you enjoy it, you're all right. But if you don't, it's hard luck.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
What sort of hours did you have?
Well, back when I went to railroading, any kind of hours. Sometimes you'd be 16 hours on the road, and you'd have to camp somewhere. You wouldn't get to the other end. We had a 16-hour law now. It's a 12-hour law now. After you're on duty 12 hours, you got to take 8 hours rest. The government
right.
put that in. But just before I came here, they didn't have the 16-hour law. And sometimes they'd be a week making a round trip because they had these little small engines and they didn't pull much, just a little handful of cars and passenger trains. You'd have to give way to all the passenger trains. Well, that would pull the double track. They'd go on the fast track, maybe sometime it'd be, have to stay in there for 6 or 7 passenger trains come by.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's all the difference in the world in railroading now, even when I came here. And it was a whole lot of difference when I came here than it was 10 years before that, too.
Yeah, I can imagine. Things have certainly been changing in the last 80 years.
Yes, no doubt about it.
What was the... heard that some of the engineers used to really decorate up their engines.
Well, you know, back years ago, engineer would stand for a regular job. They'd give him a regular and assign a regular engine to him.
Mm-hmm.
And that engine come in, they knock the fire out of it and put it in the roundhouse, so they call that engineer again, then they'd get it ready for him to go out. Well, these passenger engineers, they had some of the prettiest engines you ever saw. They had them all brassed up and shined up, clean as a pin. They took pride in those engines. Put their name with brass letters about that long on the side of the cab.
Did you have a particular engineer that you worked for?
Oh,
all
yeah,
the time?
Yeah. With crews, we were assigned engineer, and each crew had an engineer and a fireman. That was a crew. And when they call that crew, they call the engineer and the fireman.
Mm-hmm.
Same way with the trainman. They had a conductor, and he had two brakemen assigned to him. And when they'd call that conductor, they'd call those two brakemen. Yeah, they were regular assigned.
So you never got a chance to decorate the inside also, though, did you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did. What sort of things did you do?
I fired for an engineer for a good while in freight service. Well, out here at the Spencer shops then, when they put your engine in the shop, knowing that you were not going out maybe for 48 hours, Mm-hmm. They had a bunch of colored boys, and they cleaned those engines, rubbed them down, polished the brass. Well, this man I fired for, was engine 4858.
What was his name?
Chandler, A.B. Chandler. Been dead now several years. We'd go out of here, it had a stoker on it then. We'd go out of here on that run. Of course, all you had to do was set your stoker. If you knew how to set that stoker, that'd do the business. About the first hill we'd hit, you slow down, he'd get a piece of waste, and I would too, and he'd take half of the boiler head, and I'd take the other half, shine it and clean it all up. Mm-hmm. Of course, I had a water hose.
Let me just turn the tape over. Alrighty.
They had water hose attached to those boilers, long, over 15, 18 feet long. And you could take that water hose, keep your coal wet down, keep the dust down, mm-hmm. keep the dust all washed up on the deck of the engine. Also had a little air hose that you could blow it dry. That mechanical department took care of all that, you know.
It was just you. It was just a fireman and an engineer then in the cab.
Yep.
Did you all talk much?
Oh, yeah.
On your runs?
Yeah, all the time. Well, it had a brakeman as a rule for a long time. The brakeman rode in the cab with the freight trains, but later on they built a little house on the back of that tank, and the brakeman would ride back there where he could see the train, and going around all the curves he could see both sides of the train, you know. Mm-hmm. So he rode back in that little house most of the time.
He would be all alone there?
Huh?
Would he be all alone?
Oh yeah, sure. They had that little house, had a winter on each side, the glass door, had it steam heated. Oh, that's nice.
What kinds of things did y'all talk about usually?
Oh, anything, just like any two men talk when mm-hmm. they get together. Mostly good looking girls.
Yeah. Were there any, you ever sing much?
What?
Did y'all sing at all or anything like that?
I used to love to sing. I'd sing a whole lot. Not many of them do any singing.
Any, I don't know, did you make up railroad songs or anything like
that?
No,
we didn't.
Songs about the railroad?
We talked about the railroad, of course, but we didn't. A lot of these boys come by here and sit here and talk with me. Some of the boys been out there 35, 40 years. We have a time reminiscing, going over the runs that we made years together, mm-hmm. you know. Somehow or another, I dream nearly every night something about the railroad. I dreamed really? Last night. I was in the company of the vice president. He'd been dead a good while. Have a little dream about the railroad.
You said that you went up to Washington every now and then.
Yeah, I was local chairman back in that day for the firemen. I handled all the grievances for them. And I'd get a bunch of grievances, and once in a while we'd have to take it all the way to Washington mm-hmm. to get the main office to settle them, you know.
What sort of grievances did y'all usually have?
Oh, we have all kinds of grievances. Sometimes we'd get a man fired. I'd take charge of that and go to. In other words, I was the lawyer for that man, just like the company. The superintendent would be the lawyer for the company, you know. Mm-hmm. I know we was trying a boy one day for being drunk. And after the trial, everybody went out of the office except me and the superintendent. The superintendent said, don't you think that fella should be fired? I said, well, I'm the attorney for that man. You're the attorney for the company. You couldn't expect me to tell you to fire that man. And of course, he knew that, too.
Yeah. Sir, was drinking a big problem among railroad men?
Well, it wasn't with many men. Lots of fellas. We've had several of them run up, you run off the railroad completely. That was the man I'm telling you about now on that trial. They finally ran him away because he'd get off and stay drunk 30 days. Then he'd go out on the road and make a round trip, and he'd be in worse condition if he'd been half drunk.
Mm-hmm.
So they finally fired him. That is absolutely prohibited, drinking on duty. If they caught you, they could fire you for it. We call that Rule G.
Rule G?
Yeah, try if it would, Rule G. Under the influence.
They didn't fire many people under that rule, did they? Or?
Well, not many. We don't have too many fired. Most of the men take a drink, but most of them would be off duty drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I just meant on duty. Well, years ago, if you get in trouble drinking off of duty, they'd fire you. But finally, they cut that out. Some engineer up north, they fired him for something. And he wasn't on duty for whatever they fired him for. He carried it to court. The court ruled that the railroad had nothing to do with a man when he's off of duty.
Mm-hmm.
So that cleared up that situation.
I'd agree with that, I think.
Yeah. I would too. I know one of the first cases I had that fired a boy. He was off of duty and 15 miles out of town and got in trouble. I told that superintendent then, I said, that man was 15 miles out of town and marked off. Wasn't even connected to the railroad at all. And I said, I contend the railroad got nothing to do with that. He said, I do too, but you know the rules. Then later on, they changed that rule.
Hmm. What year was it that you started, getting some position of authority, I guess, in the union?
Well,
did you start off being active in it?
Yeah, sure. I was active in the lodge. We had the lodge meeting once a week, and we elected our representatives, you know, the membership did. I was a local chairman, that is, up here, a local. Then we had a man we called the general chairman that was over all of the local chairman, which was 12 or 13 of them, mm-hmm. on the Southern Railway system.
What year back was it that you got the job as local chairman?
It must have been about 38, I reckon it was. I was local chairman for 14 years. We have a convention every 4 years. I went to 3 conventions. I went to Denver, Colorado. Stayed out there nearly 2 months. Then I went to San Francisco. Stayed out there nearly 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got an appointment in the Grand Lodge on the Constitution Committee for the convention in Boston. And I was in the Grand Lodge in Cleveland for about 3 or 4 months.
Did you ever go out on strike?
Yeah, I went out on one strike. They called a strike. I forget what year that was. And my run, I stood first out. I was running the freight run then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't out but a few days. And when they went back to work, hi! So the superintendent and train master and the officials would try to operate the best way they could, but they couldn't do much with it, you know. I know when the strike come to a close, they called me and told me to go to the special station.
Mm-hmm.
They'd already made up the train, and the superintendent was on the engine, was going to run it, and he saw me. He said, boy, I sure am glad to see you. Come on up here.
Do you remember what the strike was about, when it was over?
No, I don't remember. We had so many grievances. Mm-hmm. It was almost strike. We had, I know I stayed in Washington 30 days or more on a committee. About couple of hundred of us on that committee was about to strike the whole country. If finally got it settled. We had a, on these conventions, we had 1,000 delegates. What is that? Is that a pigeon right there? I know he eats all that bird food. Boy, when he gets down there, yeah, he cleans that pigeon. I believe it was a pigeon.
I think it was.
Yeah, we had 1,000 delegates at the convention. It cost about $2 million put on the convention.
Really? That's a lot of money. Did y'all, you generally feel that the railroad, that the people that ran the railroad were good and you know, and liked their workers in general or not?
What?
Well, did you get the feeling that the people that ran the railroad in general wanted to do the best they could for the railroad workers?
Yeah, sure. We had mighty good officials on the Southern Railway, especially. The Southern Railway right now is the most prosperous railroad in the world. Ain't no doubt about that. It's really making money. Just spent me $50 million over here about 7 or 8 miles. They pay you to go away and go through that plant sometimes if you could. They got what's called a hump yard. Everything's computerized. Everything's push button. They switch 100 cars in 10, 15 minutes. They've got, even when they bring in 100 cars with an engine behind it, and they cut the cars loose, there's a man sitting up in the tower. They know that wherever car's going, they got a picture here. This car's going in that track, this car's going in that track. They want that engineer to move that train to cut that car loose. He doesn't move it, he pushes a button. They move the engine down there themselves from the tower. Mm. He's just sitting there reading the paper. They cut that car loose, goes down a hump, and it's computer. The computer knows how fast it's going, and it goes through the first slow up. It got to slow up these things like this on each side of the track that comes in on the wheel. The first place will slow it up. Well, the computer will tell the other one whether or not to slow it up again before it gets in and couples up to the train. It's a wonderful thing to see. We got about 50 tracks there.
That sounds like it's made things easy. What were you making when you first started for the railroad?
I met the chief clerk out there in the Mass Mechanics office one morning. I just received my check. At that time, we was getting paid every 20th, once a month. And I had a check for $70, and I showed it to him. He said, my, if I could make that much money, boy, I wouldn't know what to do with it. He was chief clerk in the Mass Mechanics office, making $40 a month,
really?
6 days a week. The job I come off of is now paying $3,000 a month.
That's good money. Y'all have good retirement.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I got a good, I don't worry about anything. I got a good retirement. See, I get a retirement, my wife does too. I paid on that stuff for years and years. But it's really costing those boys now. Some of them quitting because of it. You see, every year it goes by, people are getting old and living longer. But it's that pension checks now that they're sending out, it's so many of them that the boys that's working has got to keep that money up, you know. They pay as much again as I paid when I was paying on it.
That's right.
I tell these boys, I don't quit, boys. Keep my check coming. See, we got to set up with Congress. That the railroad can't do away with that pension, our pension at all. They got nothing to do with it. Comes through the government.
Got things worked out pretty well. Are there any, I wonder if there are any stories that about wrecks or something that, that people tell.
About what?
Railroad wrecks or things like that.
Well, like I said, I've never had a wreck, but we've had some powerful wrecks since I've been here. I've seen wrecks out down on that railroad where they turned over as high as 65 cars one time. Well, you take a train, these freight trains, of course the equipment's better now. They're old, getting roller bearings where they used to have these old hot boxes that you have to pack them all with dope, you know. Well, a roller bearing will run indefinitely. Well, these trains would be so long, you'd have a hot box back in and ring a journal off. You wouldn't even know about the train turned over.
Really?
Huh? I know when the stokers first came here, I was sitting out there on the YMCA porch one afternoon. The man sitting right there beside me, another farmer. I said, there's a man younger than me and marked up on that stoker was going out next morning. I said, I'm going over and pull that fella. So this fella said, ain't no use, so he was older than me, he said, I'm going to pull him myself. I said, go ahead. That train went out next day, that big engine turned over at Lynchburg, killed a fireman, engineer, and brakeman. That was a big engine then. That was when the big engines first started coming here. We called them a 5,000 type engine. And that was one of the biggest in the Southern had. There was track man was working on the track. And that engine, when it went down and hit that track where they were working, the track did like that. Mm-hmm. Went over against the bank, turned the engine over. Hung the engineer and the fireman in there, burnt the fireman up. He lived, got him to the hospital, flesh fell off his body when he woke. And the engineer was hung onto that engine 8 hours. A man came out from the cigarette factory there, with acetylene torch, went on there and stayed with him till they got him cut loose. The stoker had him all jammed up against the side of the cab. He didn't have a broken bone or nothing. He said, I'm all right, up. Nothing wrong with me. He died in 5 minutes. Really? After we got him out from in there, he'd been under there 8 hours breathing that steam. As soon as fresh air hit him, pneumonia. Had him waiting. And that brakeman was sitting on the head end of the head car. And when that train turned over, of course, he went down and drug him along there. They picked him up in a basket. Get him off, people. Mm-hmm. There haven't been many railroad men killed since I've been here. We lost 3 engineers 1 year. That was about 15 years ago. One of them went back. He had no business going back, and something wrong with the train. He went back and he's going to couple it up. And when he walked in between the two drawheads, get on the other side, and that fireman moved that engine, coupled up on it, killed him. Another one, this train was going north, and the switcher was heading out from a place over in Virginia, and they threw the switch after that engineer passed that other signal back there under Claire Board. He went down and then turned that engine over. He wouldn't have killed him, and didn't kill the fireman or brakeman either. What they killed him if he hadn't jumped off. But he jumped off and tried to go up a bank and roll back and caught him to one of all pieces. Then we had a train going east between Greensboro and Raleigh down at Gibsonville, just around Elon College. And the passenger train running right ahead of this freight train, and that great big old steam connection on the rear end of that passenger train, mm-hmm. had dropped down, and as it went by, it come in between the switches and crack that track. Well, didn't have any signals down there. This freight train come down, I reckon he's running 50, 60 miles an hour. Went right into that fast track before he knew anything about it. Burnt the engineer up. And burnt the fireman up. Like burnt the brakeman up. Brakeman got well, he got married. Man built this hospital and sold it. He died and she sold it. And she married that brakeman here not long ago. But the engineer and fireman both burnt up. Trouble about a steam engine, it's top heavy. Mm-hmm. And the least little thing, you know, it'll turn over.
Yeah.
A diesel, you can run a diesel now. The diesel came in out here. I don't know where you read about that wreck on that Amtrak.
Yeah, the one just
blew. He came in there about 60 miles an hour, and the switch was wrong and went in that fast track. Just went on down through the track, through the yard there till it plowed up. See, all the weight of a diesel's down on the track, mm-hmm. those motors and everything. They won't turn over unless they're up on a field, bank. Go down a bank, it's going to be my turnover. Didn't either one of these fellas get hurt and rode that engine to the stop.
When you got to be an engineer, what kind of a train were you running then?
Running steam. Then the diesels came into picture.
Do you remember your first run as an engineer?
Yes, 48-92. I remember the man that's firing for me. He just died here not long ago.
What was his name?
Ramsey. Buddy Ramsey. 48-92. I had what they called it was a Blue Eagle, they called it. It was a cotton mill special. I handled all cotton mill stuff. And it'd come in here from Greenville, South Carolina, go to Greensboro, down by Burlington, Durham, and Raleigh, to Selma and into Norfolk. And it'd average about 72 cars every night. I had 72 cars that night. I used to go through that state, see that railroad run right through that state college down there.
Mm-hmm.
So we go through the state college every time we make a run.
Did you prefer night rides or daytime?
No, I prefer day rides. But you...
Did it usually start off on the night?
Well, they see the railroad's got no certain time. The passenger train's got a certain time. But the rest of them, whenever they get the train ready.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you just have to be on call?
Yeah.
Were there... Well, I guess by the time you were an engineer, they didn't have call boys.
Oh, they got call boys yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the call boy, if you live at Spencer's route, he'd come after you. Of course, call me by phone always.
Let's see. Did you ever have a nickname?
Huh?
Did you have a nickname while you worked on the railroad?
No, I had a couple of my buddies called me Slim after I come on the railroad.
Called you Slim?
Yeah.
Why was that?
Well, at that time I weighed about 160 pounds. When I got out of the Navy in 1919, I weighed 207 pounds. And I was 32 inches around the waist.
Mm.
I weigh 207 pounds today, and I'm 43 inches around the waist.